The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Today we're going to bring you a romance writer who has sold over 40 million books. Her name is Julie Garwood, and I talked to her back in the year 2000. She had just published her first contemporary romance. It was called Heartbreaker. She had sold millions of copies of her historical romances and then went on to sell millions more of the contemporaries. It's the Best of the Book Nook.
Good afternoon, Miami Valley. Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. It's my pleasure to have on the program today Julie Garwood. She's written a new book called Heartbreaker, and this book is sort of a departure for Julie. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Julie, you've had quite a career this last 15 years. I'm sure there's a few listeners out there who aren't familiar with you. Tell us what you've been up to the last 15 years.
Writing. I took a year off from college. I had gone back to get my degree, kind of a dual thing, four-year RN in history. But when my youngest started first grade, I decided to write a children's book. And so I went to the college librarian and said, how do you format it? What do you do? And she gave me the books. I did the homework and went home and wrote the story. And when that was done, I put it on a shelf. I was also taking an ancient and medieval history course, so I decided to write a historical. Being a romantic at heart, I made it a love story. And when that was finished, I put that on the shelf. Then there was a conference in Kansas City, and an agent from New York came. And I was fortunate enough to meet her at an open house. I told her I had written a children's book, and she kind of scrunched up her nose and said, I don't like to market children's things, you know, difficult, et cetera, because the market was real glutted back then, but go ahead and send it to me. I think it was pity, really, that she did it because I was the only one she hadn't spent any time with. She called me and said she thought it would make a great after-school special. And Scholastic eventually bought it, but she asked me if I had anything else, and I said, well, I've written a love story, but there's a catch. It takes place in 1086. And she said, that's called a historical, and I'm sure she was thinking, you big dork, you know, because I didn't know that. I didn't know genres. I didn't know that the children's book is really a YA or young adult. That I was writing historical romance. I was just writing stories and loving to blend history with these fictitious families that I would drop in 1086 or 1205 and see how they react to the Magna Carta that's coming or whatever's going on. The goal was to make history painless, and the goal for writing the children's book was to get into classroom to talk to kids about reading. So I was very fortunate. Pocket purchased the first book, and I've been writing for them ever since. They're a real great publisher. I've been very fortunate. I've had the same editor all these years, and she leaves me alone. She just lets me do my thing. That's even greater. When I came up with this book, it's a departure because it's a contemporary. And I tried to make this story work in a historical setting because I love the historical so much. But the fact is it needed to be told in a contemporary voice. So I bit the bullet and typed. I had no idea how liberating it would be. I got to type words like Diet Coke for the first time ever. And Styrofoam, you know, it's real fun.
You mentioned Scholastic a moment ago, and I can remember years ago subscribing to the Scholastic book program when I was in my grade school, and now we look at the charts and we see all these books on the Scholastic imprint, the Harry Potter books.
Oh, yes.
That's really had an impact on the book list, hasn't it?
I certainly know it's had an impact on my nephew, who didn't like to read until Harry Potter. So Rawlings, who is the author of these works, deserves high praise. She has done what a lot of people haven't been able to do, and that is get kids really excited about reading again. So much so that teachers are reading parts of it in class, and then the kids go home and keep reading. That's phenomenal. And it's great. Harry Potter, there are three books on the New York Times now. I know that a lot of authors wanted to move out of July into late fall so that they wouldn't have to fight, you know, those books. I went on at number 7, which is great, but it's even greater that I'm on there with Harry Potter.
Julie, you really got me right away because you sent most of the book in Iowa. It starts off in Kansas City. That's where you're from.
Absolutely, yes.
When you're talking about driving down Ward Parkway, I could picture that, and the only thing that was missing in my mind was all those statues.
I know. I remember the Democratic National Convention was in Kansas City years ago, and they said Kansas City has a fountain fetish. We have fountains everywhere. Well, we like them, so what can I tell you? I grew up playing football and soccer on the little grassy knolls on Ward Parkway. And that's, you just always picked up a game there, so to speak, and girls played along with the boys. And it was kind of a social thing. So it was fun to be able to name these streets and talk about the people. I've always thought Kansas City is kind of like where I am right now, a best-kept secret. Great place to raise kids. They can go outside and play. It's low cost of living. You know, I get asked a lot, you could live anywhere. You could be in Paris, wherever there's electricity. But Kansas City is home and family. And besides, I like complaining about the weather.
It does get a little warm in Kansas City.
I love warm. I'm good.
Do they still have the big 4th of July fireworks thing?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's called the Spirit Festival. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love going down there on the, I think it was the night of Thanksgiving when they light the lights at the plaza.
The plaza lights. That's
so
a big
fun.
Deal.
Yeah.
Every year we do it, but then so does most of Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It's just a celebration.
What made you choose Iowa as the locale for most of this new book?
When I was in sixth grade, I went with a family of the babysitter for a week's vacation to a place called Clearwater, Iowa.
That's up by Creston.
I can't remember now. I just remember being in awe. It is so beautiful up there. And then a couple of years later, my family we rented a cabin for a week. And I can't tell you what the lake was, but you could see 80 feet down. It was just remarkable. I think Iowa is the most beautiful place. There were so many beautiful places that I decided to make one up and put it in the middle of it, and that's Holyoke, the name of the town that I came up with.
Let's talk about the book without giving away too many details. You have a priest.
Yes.
And then you have the priest's sister, and then you have the priest's best friend, and he's an FBI agent. And these are the three main characters, and then there's some others.
Yes. Father Tommy, I wanted to write a story about this FBI character, and I wanted also to write a story about the church since it takes place in the confessional. The opening is a penitent, who's not really penitent, confessing a sin he's going to commit. He's actually mocking the priest, and it becomes a personal deal. You know, it's he tells the priest, "Don't you wonder why I chose you?" And at the end, he tells him who the victim is, and it's Tommy's sister, Laurent. The idea for this book is really kind of a funny story. I was in London with my sister, Mary. We call her Cookie forever. Her real name is Mary Colette, which is why we call her Cookie. Anyway, Cookie is what I'd call a militant Catholic. And the deal was she would go with me, but we had to go to Mass every day, which, by the way, isn't a rule, but if you're with Cookie, it is. So we found this real old church, and because we were so excited to go to London, I had never been, and I do my research in libraries, and I was finally going to get to see these places. So we didn't sleep at all on the plane and had been up 24 hours when we went to, I think it was the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. And any of you who have seen Sister Act, if you remember the priest, well, he has a double, and he's at this church, and he was the one saying the Mass. And he started this sermon, and he was telling parables. But when he would get to the lesson of the parable, or the punch, as we call it, he just stopped. And then he would pause and very dramatically say, "But I know you know," and just stop. And anyway, he did this three times, and each time he added on more, "I know you know, I know you know." And being punchy, I leaned into Cookie and said, "I don't know." Well, that started her laughing, and she, of course, immediately got up and left. She wouldn't sit with me anymore because I had made her laugh in church. And being the good Catholic girl, I immediately started daydreaming, and I noticed a confessional on the side, the old-fashioned, you know, this church was over 100 years old, of course, with this tattered red velvet curtain. And I started thinking, what these guys hear? And that led to Father Tommy. And what would shock him and what wouldn't. You know, the integrity of the confession is sacred. You must protect it at all costs. I read in USA Today that, in fact, it was on the news that a man stabbed a priest during confession, and the priest could not describe him to the police, nor could he acknowledge that he had been stabbed, even though it was quite obvious. That's protecting the integrity. So it was real fun to have this killer give Father Tom permission to tell the police, and Father Tom say, "It doesn't matter that you've given me permission, I can't tell." And that's to protect it, of course. You know, in a court of law, the guy could say, "Hey, that was supposed to be sacred." So, and to mess with him, and how I got around it.
And Tommy's best friend is Nick. Now, I understand for readers of your other books, Nick maybe is someone they know.
The name is Buchanan. He's no relationship.
Okay.
But there's another FBI agent called Noah Claiborne, and he's a descendant of the Claibornes from For the Roses. And it was really kind of like a family reunion to bring these guys to see where they came from. The heritage, you know, that was fun. There's a compass that is given to Cole Claiborne, and this is a Western, you know, the 1800s. And then to see in 2000 this Noah Claiborne with this compass, it's just been handed down.
Nick, he's kind of homely. What's the problem with this guy?
Oh, he's not homely. He's GQ. He's very good looking. His problem is he's seen a little too much. Or as one of his friends say, he's starting to like the job a little too much, meaning he's getting too callous. She, on the other hand, is everything he thinks he doesn't want. It's interesting, on the way over here, the escort said that sometimes you don't get what you want, you get what you need. And I think that's what this story is. It's two people coming together, and in this mess that they're involved in, finding something remarkable. I like to write about families, and I have to have humor in the story, because if I don't, I won't like it. And if I don't like it, the reader won't. I'll never write about a character who can't laugh at himself because they're not likable. And when things are tough, it's real important. It's why the Irish laugh at wakes. Sounds sadistic, but it's a great send-off.
Now, Garwood, that's Irish, isn't it?
Oh, it's English, but I'm a Murphy. So
okay.
This red hair is real.
Okay, Julie Garwood has joined us. Her new book is Heartbreaker. You're really good at building suspense in this book.
Oh, thank you. You know what? This book has been optioned for a feature film. And they're real committed to doing the movie. It'd be fun to go see it.
Well, you know, your bad guy. I figured out who the bad guy was, but I don't think most readers would figure that out. For some reason, a red flag went off when the bad guy comes into the plot actually as a person. And I said to myself, no, he's too nice. That's what I said. This guy's too nice. I don't trust that.
It's funny because so far, you're the first one who figured it out. It's interesting. I went to see a movie, The Sixth Sense, with another writer. And we had been told only that there's a surprise in the movie. We both had figured out and didn't know that was a surprise. So when it didn't happen, and then when you get to that point, I was more surprised people didn't know that. It was still a great movie. And I thought that the 12-year-old who played one of the leads was incredible and scary. The whole thing was just a great, it worked. In this book, it was the who, why, where, you know, motivation was real important for me. A proud moment for me was surprising and shocking my editor, who does a lot of mysteries. She said she yelled out loud when she got to one scene because then it clicked when it was supposed to, which is good. Suspense, it's fun to do. And a reviewer said, gave me such a compliment. She said, it's very Hitchcock. You give me goosebumps, but I'm laughing. And that's nice. That's a nice compliment.
I think that is apropos. And I guessed who he was, but I didn't figure out all the convoluted connections and interrelationships and why he was doing what he was doing. That was a complete shock and surprise to me. And I love some of your peripheral characters. I think one of my favorite scenes in the whole book was when they go over to the two elderly sisters' home.
Bessie Jean and Viola Vanderman.
That was so classic. I love that scene.
And Daddy. Did you love Daddy?
Daddy. The whole scene is magnificent.
Oh, thank you. Bessie Jean and Viola were kind of, I took two people from my growing up years. They were back then, believe it or not, called old maids. And they were my mother's dear friends. They were about 20 years older than my mother. And my mother didn't have me until she was 42, and I'm not the baby. You know, the good Irish Catholic family, you just had kids. So their names were Beulah and Vesta. And Beulah and Vesta ran this beauty shop out of the basement of their home and used to give us perms every year in September before we would go back to school and send us home in hairnets. I am not making this up. I think this is why I have such a warped sense of humor. One year we came home looking like 1930s starlets with the little finger waves. And my mother was laughing so hard she was crying. And we weren't amused. We were 8 and 9 and looked like old ladies. But
they were giving you the latest, though. That was the latest.
Oh, yes. In their eyes, it was. It wasn't in ours. My gosh, you know, you're talking 1958 or 57. But they knew everything. They knew it before the newspaper or the television or radio knew it. And they kept everybody apprised. That's what Bessie, Jean, and Viola were. And they were basically good-hearted people who... Bessie Jean is pretty much prejudiced against everything, so it's okay. She doesn't have a specific, she just doesn't like anything, and her sister is the opposite.
We all know the neighbor who doesn't miss a beat, who's peering out of the edge of the shade and observing. And they got right on the phone and they made a phone call when they saw something going on.
I kind of used my neighborhood when I was a kid. You know, back then, if you did something wrong, you usually got whacked on the shoulder 3 times before you got home by other mothers. And that was just the way things were. And, of course, your mother knew before you got to the front porch what you had done. Everybody watched out for everyone else. That's real important with kids, and it's something we need to do more today than ever. They do that in small towns, and we're starting to do it again in our neighborhoods. It's real important. You know, now we have the, you put it in the window that you're a school, what other mother, and they'll come to your door if there's a problem or they're locked out. Kids don't play in the neighborhoods the way they used to. And I think that social interaction, some of the best memories I have are kick the can in the yard. You know, we were, I think they call it the Catholic ghetto. There were 83 kids on my block, and we weren't the big block.
83 kids on
Concord
the block.
Concord had 123 kids. That was the block to live on. Oh, yeah, the big old three-story houses falling apart, but who cared? And everything was centered around the parish. We had a block rosary when that was the big deal. You had to go do it once a week. Well, kids hate that. But they always had cool desserts afterwards. And there was a Jewish couple who lived on the block who did, you know, they took their turn like everyone else. And we had block parties. We, if you lived on 52nd Street or on Walnut, that was, that's where your parties were.
How far from Westport was that?
About, 10 minutes away.
Was it? Julie Garwood has joined us. Heartbreaker is her new book. As a man reading this book, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I know a lot of women love what you do. I know you have a lot of male readers as well. I love the combination of suspense and mystery and thriller with a really great love story.
Thanks. That's the fun of it for me. Do you want to hear something funny?
Sure.
I always write three endings. Talk about Space Cadet. I didn't realize until my fifth book I was doing it. I would finish it, and then I'd think, no, that last scene, I need to do it a different way or tell it from a different viewpoint. And I go back and I write the second ending, and then I think, what was I thinking? I've done it wrong again, and I do a third ending. And do you know, with every single book, I send in the first ending. Isn't that funny? It was my editor who finally said, you know, it's your way of letting go of the book because I can't completely rewrite it, which is what I always want to do. If I could just write it one more time, then it would be perfect. And I guess that's my cross, you know, that if I had my way, I'd never let go of it.
Well, 30 million books later, I'd say you figured it out.
Thanks.
My guest is Julie Garwood. Her new book is Heartbreaker.
It's real interesting. I did a book signing yesterday, and I got a lot of questions. When are you going to write so-and-so's story? And then they would have to remind me who that minor character was from what book. It's great to have such loyal readers that they remember. Coming up with names is the hardest thing for me. When I start a book, the female character is always Mary. That was my mom's name. Actually, her name was Felicity Mary. I can remember when I was 10 and 11 being embarrassed by such a name, and now it is so popular. But then her girlfriends called her Flip, which, you know, to a 10-year-old makes no sense. And the male is usually Tom, Dick, or Harry, until I figure out who they're supposed to be. It's kind of like the title of the book. I never have a title until the story tells me. In this confessional scene, I was more surprised than anyone when he says, when Father Tom says, "Who are you?" And he answers, "I'm a heartbreaker." And I thought, that's the title. And that's how I knew. And in Saving Grace, he says to her, "You are my saving grace." And that was at the end of the book. And that became the title. So.
Julie Garwood has joined us. Julie, I know we're running short on time here, but I just wanted to mention that I checked out your website, and I was only halfway through with the book, and I tried to answer the quiz on there about the book, and I think I got I got three wrong out of, I think there were 12 questions. Do you have someone run the website for you? How did that all come about? Everyone's got a website now. What's your story?
The truth is I don't use a computer. which is embarrassing. However, I was humiliated a couple of months ago by my 8-year-old nephew who said, I can teach you how. And I thought, it is time for me to come into this century. I have a computer at home, and I hired a website group who put up the site. I do all the writing for it, and I answer all the questions. But, you know, the design and all. Actually, I did that too, and then they put it on a computer. So I'm getting there. I'm still not writing on the computer. Nonfiction, it's a piece of cake. But the fiction, there's just something about paper. And I don't know, the typing and doing the whole thing. I know that with a computer it's a lot easier, but I like the ritual of the electric typewriter. I'm not as bad as Tom Wolfe. Mm-hmm. I understand he uses a 1960 Underwood manual.
He's got a bunch of spares, I understand.
Oh, he'd have to, yeah. Well, mine's kind of with it. It doesn't have a memory or any of that. But I will make the switch. It's just going to be slow, and I'll balk.
Now, do you write in longhand and then type it?
No, I type.
You type it initially.
As soon as I turn that machine on, I'm there. I try not to leave a scene that isn't working. I try to make it work and be in an exciting spot. That's more fun, but not always. I just get in and put the time in. I start around 5:30 and...
In the morning?
And roll. Mm-hmm. Grab my Diet Coke, and I'm ready to roll.
So you're an early bird.
Yes.
Now, I noticed, you just mentioned Diet Coke. I noticed you mentioned a couple of products just in passing. I think you say Palmolive soap, I think, and there were a couple of those that I
noticed. It was just fun to do it. I mean, in a medieval, you just can't say these words. And well, I think he drinks a Bud Light one night or something, and I think that's just fun to do.
Right. Okay. So are these products that you personally enjoy?
Oh, yes. I love Diet Coke.
Okay.
Like Diet Pepsi, too.
All right. Well, Julie, it's really a treat to have you on the Book Nook.
I'm very happy to be here again. You do know you live in a wonderful area. Of course, being from Kansas, you got to, you know, I'd appreciate it more than most.
Well, don't tell anybody.
I'm going to.
One more question. What's the last good book you read?
Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt. It's a hard book to read, but being Irish, and I love his writing. It was a wonderful story, and it'll make you cry. But I haven't read Tis yet. I have it. I haven't started it. And another one that I didn't bring with me is A Man in Full by Tom Wolfe.
That's a big book.
That's why I didn't bring it.
Julie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the best of the Book Nook, going back 26 years to an interview I did with the romance writer Julie Garwood, talking about her first contemporary romance, Heartbreaker. And she died in 2023 in Kansas City. And we had a great time together that day, one of several interviews I did with Julie back in the day when romance writers came through Dayton regularly on book tour. For the best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. It's always a pleasure to be here with you every Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, every Sunday morning at 10:30, and we have over 1,200 podcasts at wyso.org. Listen anytime.